Hey guys, welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell. Today, Jeff Schwartz of so many places, including his podcast, Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You, joins me to talk about the Chiefs and their surprisingly close game against the Raiders. Plus, we preview Chiefs, Bills, and Cowboys, Eagles. Everything you want to know about the two biggest games of the weekend here on the show today. But first, I want to tell you about another podcast, which is now available twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. The Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny, a podcast hosted by ESPN NFL analyst Mina. Oh, I know Mina Kimes. I forgot. Of course I know Mina Kimes. Mina Kimes is a friend of our show, a friend of mine. Of course you're listening to Mina Kimes already, but if you're not for some crazy reason, Mina Kimes is hosting the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny twice a week during the season here. She's joined on Tuesdays by another friend of ours, Dominique Foxworth. And then later in the week, she's joined by different expert guests to preview the most intriguing games. That is the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. Listen wherever you are listening to this podcast. And now, here's Jeff Schwartz breaking down the two biggest games of Week 6. All right, joining me now, as promised here on the Bill Barnwell Show, a regular contributor to the podcast, someone I love to have on as an expert, a former NFL player, a podcaster, hosting, of course, Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You, a man who writes for Fox Sports occasionally, hops on SiriusXM, just a man of many talents, one of which is making us smarter about the NFL. It's my friend Jeff Schwartz. Jeff, how are you?
I am fantastic. I'm glad to be here, man. We are full speed ahead in NFL season. We're starting to kind of get a real sense of what these teams are and are not, and it should be a fun rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting. You know, like I think there's that sense of September still like being the new preseason. I don't know if that's 100% true, but we've seen some good football, some sloppy football, and I think on Monday night we saw a really interesting game. I don't know if it was great football at all times, but it was a very fascinating game between the Chiefs and the Raiders. So we're going to start talking about that game because there's a lot to get to. Of course, there's the whole other analytics discussion we can get to. I'm going to leave that out because I think it's just I'm tired of it.
You're tired of it? Yeah, look, Bill, it's very simple.
Yeah.
When it works, it's great. And when it doesn't work, it's bad. It's all bad. The worst thing, by the way, the whole thing discussion about the 2-point stuff, I think had nothing to do with analytics. He just wanted to go for two. Like it was that simple. Like it wasn't this long discussion. He's like, we want to win the game now.
Yep.
Let's go for two. I'm like, all right, cool. Like whatever. I don't know. Yeah. I think that just kind of, it's the same with this concussion and with Tua's concussion and the roughing the passer. They're not the same thing. Mm-hmm. Why are we discussing them in the same breath? They're two different things.
Yes. 100%. We should talk about roughing the passer. Let's talk about that later. Let's finish up with that because I feel like there's a conversation to be had about that. But you're right. I mean, I'm not going to lie. You know, I don't know Andy Reid personally. I know you played for him.
Yeah.
I don't think he's sitting there on Tuesday in Excel, like grinding out win expectancy charts. Like, I think he just says, hey, I have a great offense. I can win the game now. Why not go ahead and try to get the 2-pointer? And for the Raiders, same thing. Like,
we are
down a point. Our defense is not very good. Like, if we get this 2-pointer, we can win just by stopping them from getting a touchdown because they don't trust their kicker, who was a backup kicker, wasn't playing very well. You know, I think it's defensible. I don't think it's crazy. I don't think it was obviously a genius move. It was fine. It's okay. Things don't have to be great or terrible. They can just be fine. Well, we did have the analytics conversation, but we had a better analytics conversation, hopefully, than the one I thought other people would be having. But let me start with this, Jeff. Yes. As a former Chiefs player, as someone whose brother was a former Chiefs player, I think I don't want to say you're biased, but I think you have a soft spot maybe for the Chiefs.
Yes. And,
let me ask you this. At any point on Monday night, did you believe in your heart as a fan, as a gambler perhaps, did you think the Chiefs were going to lose that game?
When they punted on 4th and 2 and with about 2 minutes left, I thought they were going to lose. Yes.
Yes.
When they were down 17-0, I did not. I wagered on the Chiefs plus I wagered them when it was 17-0, then again at halftime because I figured the roughing the passer call was going to kind of fire up. I have never seen, and I don't think they were actually afraid of the crowd, but the referees didn't seem that excited to be in that stadium in that
100%.
Like, and Arrowhead's loud. I'm sorry, it's there's also louder, it's loud-ish stadiums, Seattle, New Orleans, but they were so worried. But when I tweeted out, like, at the time, I didn't think the Chiefs were going to stop the Raiders. And it really took a mistake by Devontae Adams, which, you know, he should have caught that ball. When one clean catch, otherwise Carlson's in, you know, field goal range and they win that game. In the final play of the game, you know, both players collided, but the ball wasn't close to any of them. I don't think, even if Adams was still able to finish, I think he was running the post route and Renfro was running a deep out. I don't think that he was getting there. The ball was like 20 yards away from him. I thought they were going to lose. I did. I don't trust a lot of defenses in that 2-minute situation anymore. Offenses are so good now, and you don't even need that many yards to get into field goal range. And I mean, look, you've been covering football as long as I played and watched football, right? Like, do you remember, I came in the NFL in 2008. If I would have told you that every kicker in the NFL can make a 55-yard field goal, you would have laughed at me. Like, that never happened. And now you're like, the Chiefs had their third string kicker make a 59-yard field goal, the longest field goal in Arrowhead history at the end of the half. Like, you just need 35 yards to get in field goal range now. So I really trust no defenses, no matter how good they are. The Bucks, the Cowboys, to ever stop anyone who needs a field goal at the end of a game.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't feel like the league maybe has adjusted quickly enough to that, because the kicker meta has changed, right? Like the, even though, yes, there are times where coaches will get in quote unquote kicker range and then they'll settle for a 58-yard field goal, you know, the range is longer and the success rate in that 50 plus range is higher, I believe, than it was 10 or 20 or 30 years ago, even though coaches are more aggressive trying for it because they know their kickers can do it now when they couldn't do it earlier in your career. I agree with you, to be honest with you. You know, I thought at 14-0 or 17-0, I was like, I still kind of think the Chiefs are going to come back and make it a game at the very least. But that did feel like a situation on that 4th-and-3 where, I mean, I don't know. You tell me.
I would have gone for it.
You know what? And this is a situation where the numbers don't matter to me. But here's what I would say. If you asked every single Raiders fan whether you'd rather the Chiefs go for it in that situation or punt, is there a single Raiders fan who would have said they hope the Chiefs go for it on 4th-and-3? Not a single person.
Every time an opponent kicks a field goal in the red zone against the Chiefs, I cheer. I'm like, great, thank you for the field goal. On 4th-and-2, you have so many options, right? I mean, if you spread out the entire defense, you have the ability for Mahomes to scramble quickly, which he doesn't do often, but obviously has the capability to do that.
Yep.
You have the best tight end possibly in NFL history out there. You have, you know, MVS does drop the ball too much, but he's big and strong and powerful. Mm-hmm. You have Juju in the slot. You have so many options on 4th-and-2. And if you don't get it, then you're going to lose the game, whatever. But I feel like I would feel more comfortable with Mahomes having the ball in his hand to end the game than I do the Chiefs defense. It worked out, which might make Andy Reid do it more often, but I would rather have had Mahomes had the ball at the end.
It just seems like it's put the ball in the hands of literally the best player in football if you can, with an opportunity to that. I don't know if that would have won them the game, but it would have put them in a very advantageous situation. The Raiders still had a timeout, still had the 2-minute warning, but they would have been in great shape, obviously, relative to a punt where, you know, like, you're going to be playing soft coverage. Probably the Raiders are going to get those 30 or 40 yards back pretty quick. You know, I just think it's such a tough situation when it comes to McDaniels. What I thought was interesting about this game from his perspective is that he was really aggressive for most of it. I mean, they go for that 4th-and-1 in the first quarter and get a long touchdown pass to Adams, which is, hey, that's totally defensible. Obviously, don't know it's going to turn into a touchdown, but hey, great. You know, you went for it against the Chiefs as an underdog and Arrowhead. You hit a big play for a touchdown. Awesome. They go for the 2-pointer later in the game. Yeah. Also awesome. Great. But I have to admit, I was surprised they kicked that field goal on 4th-and-1 in the second quarter. Yes. And those points ended up being really meaningful by the time we got to the end of this football game.
I'm with you. Against Kansas City is the only team I'd say, like, you just have to always try to score points. And points, I mean touchdowns. And, you know, it's interesting. The game plan felt very similar to the 2018 Patriots AFC Championship game plan. It was like, a lot of 21 personnel runs.
Yep.
And they kind of taking shots in between when you have the opportunity to do so. And that's what it felt like to me. Like, that's what the Raiders were doing. It worked. I mean, they kept running the same run play over and over again.
Yeah.
Chiefs couldn't stop it. But you have to be aggressive against them. We see this. Every team that plays Kansas City goes in with the mentality that we're going for it on fourth and three in, right? And that's why I was mm-hmm. surprised they kicked the field goal. I think with them, you can never lull yourself into thinking that the game is over. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, what Josh Manuel did in that instance. We're up three scores now. And you could make the case that, you know, if they don't rule the rough in the passer, that's 17-14 at halftime, right? Like, yeah. It is like everything you've done the entire game almost by halftime is erased.
It reminds me so much of the Chiefs-Texans game, where the Texans yes. were up 21-0 at the end of the first quarter. They have a 4th-and-1 from the 13-yard line in Kansas City territory, and they kick a field goal to go up 24-0, and that lead is gone by halftime. It's gone by the end of the quarter. They've given up 28 points.
It was, yeah, I mean, that game, I mean, the Chiefs, I mean, what 51-7 was like the turnaround in that game.
Yes.
I mean, they're the closest to, like, and Buffalo can do this too, but they're,
for sure.
They don't do it as, like, from behind often. Like, they don't do it as crisply as the Chiefs seem to do. Like, when Buffalo could, you know, get, and I'll tell you what, the Ravens win for them, I think was really good for their psyche of winning these close games, because they had really hadn't done it. They either blown teams out by 15 or more, or lost close games. But, you know, Kansas City feels like that team where you're always in a position where, like, it never really matters. You can score at will mm-hmm. whenever you want. And again, this goes to the point I made when the trade happened. Like, the Chiefs aren't going to miss Tyreek Hill. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're down 17-0. And scored on, what, 5-6 straight possessions in a row without Tyreek Hill? Like, they're mm-hmm. going to be fine. They are fine without him.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
So let me ask you about the offense, actually, post Tyreek Hill, because I want to talk about what the offense has changed into for Kansas City. I mean, certainly it felt like after that Bengals game in the postseason, it felt like they needed to have more options. There were so many spots in the second half of that game where the Bengals were dropping eight into coverage. They were doubling Hill. They were doubling Kelsey. And the other guys in that offense could not make it work, whether it was the other receivers or the running game. And it didn't seem like they had much confidence in the running game. When you watch this offense now through the first 5 weeks of the season, how has it changed without Tyreek Hill as sort of one of the two focal points of the offense?
Yeah, I think that they made a decision that they need to go back to more of kind of spacing things out and getting the ball out quickly. Right. Mm-hmm. And just Mahomes getting, and I felt against the Raiders too, that early in that game, he just was not in much of a rhythm. He got hit early on and he was leaving the pocket a little bit too much, kind of what he had done in the past. And without Tyreek Hill there, you're not going to get those broken plays that go explosive. You know, yeah, you might get a first down, but you're not getting those broken plays that go deep. So that can't be a big part of your offense, which I think it felt the Chiefs rely on that way too much last season. And so I think they're getting back to, we're seeing kind of the roots of the West Coast offense, just back foot, boom, ball's out. 7-8 yards is fine, right? Like, we're not trying to get ourselves 1,000 yards each play, and we'll take what the defense gives us. You know, the running game, I don't know if they're running the ball more, but I really like the under center stuff. Like they don't do it enough, in my opinion. Like, the under center, man, they're really good. We talked about this privately. Like, they're really good at under center runs, and they haven't paired up yet with play action pass. Maybe that's coming, but I just feel like they've gone back to some of the basics, and I think it really works for them. Spread the ball around. They're getting Sky Moore involved a little bit more each week too, which is nice to see. But, you know, what makes this offense is Travis Kelce. It has always been that. It continues to be that. He's just unguardable. I mean, he's just so good, man. He's so good.
Isn't it crazy that, and, like, you know, in the red zone,
he doesn't look that athletic. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't look like a guy who would outrun a defense from 10 yards out. He didn't look like that player, but he's just such a efficient mover.
Yeah, I will let the former NFL player say Travis Kelce doesn't look athletic. As the blogger, I feel like that is not my place to say.
No, but like NFL player. It's not right. Look athletic, but like, he doesn't. I don't know how to put it. Like even when Mahomes runs, okay, yeah. He never looks like he's the fastest guy, but he outruns everybody.
Yeah,
like right. And Kelce looks the same way. He doesn't look like he's going to outrun you, and you're like, oh shit, he ran through the whole defense. I mean, the long run by Cooper Kupp after that quick. Did you see that coming? I didn't see that coming. He ran I'm like, oh my God, look at this guy run.
Accelerating like through the defense.
You know, Pat Mahomes' trainer always says like, he's just faster than the guy chasing him, which is all you need to be. And Kelce, I feel like that's the same way too. Like he just is faster than the person who's running after him.
Yeah. I mean, look at that play in the red zone. It's hard to pick the specific play because he had so many red zone touchdowns yesterday or Monday. But the one where he catches the ball and he's like facing, you know, he's facing the right sideline and he turns around and goes back to the middle of the field and outruns four guys to the end zone. And it's like those guys are faster than him in terms of time speed. It's not like he's moving at an incredibly fast rate, but he just has a way to make it work, and he's been making it work for so long that it's clearly a skill. It's not just random. I tweeted something like Travis Kelce's broken tackle rate in the first 95 yards of the field is 15%, and inside the 5 yard line it's 95%. Like he just can't be tackled inside the 5 yard line.
Like, and you know, I think the genius of Andy Reid, there's many of it, but like, you know, part of designing an offense is that knowing that what the defense is going to do, obviously, right? And like he knows the defense will try to double Travis Kelce, but it's so hard because he moves them so much, right? You rarely see him line up in one place. That's why they move him so much, because you get him to free release, basically, right? To not get jammed in the line of scrimmage. They put him in that 1x3 all the time too, because if you're going to double Kelce on the 1x3, you're leaving one-on-one on the other side, right? Like exactly. It's a very clear, and they doubled Kelce and he got hit in the face. Like, you know,
did you see them double him with Clelin Ferrell?
Yeah. That was the one he got hit in the face on.
Yeah.
It's a penalty. And, you know, the Raiders did that. The Ravens have always done that against Travis Kelce. They walk out the defensive end and they try to hit him to delay his route, basically, because they know how important it is for him to get out in space. And you say, look, we're not going to get home anyways. We'll just knock down Kelce instead. teams have done that. But again, you're now, you know, the Chiefs team is just deeper now. Like they have done a great job with those draft picks they got the last couple of years. And defensively is where the big changes, in my opinion. They're just better on defense than they've ever been. And again, I said this a lot. I don't think you need to have a top five defense to win a Super Bowl in Kansas City. You need a defense that gets you some stops. And this Chiefs defense can get enough stops. You know, they rush the passer well enough. Trent McDuffie just got designated to return. So he's going to be a big addition back to that defense. And they just get enough stops. That's all you ask of them. And that's all they need to do. They're better on defense. It makes them a more well-rounded team.
Yeah. And I mean, it's funny that you don't think about them this way, but I tweeted earlier this year about the snap-adjusted age. So just, you know, looking at the age of every player who's actually playing snaps and how often they play. They're one of the youngest teams in football. They're like the third youngest team in the league, which, I mean, for a team that's competing for a Super Bowl is crazy.
I mean, that's because, look, they really done a good job in a couple of things, right? Offensive line, obviously, right? You have two young players on the offensive line. You end up having your linebackers are all within 3 years, right?
They're all on their rookie deals.
And even with Willie Gay being out, you're even younger now, right? Because you have Leo Chanel and you have Nick Bolton, who's been great. Nick Bolton's been awesome. Yeah. You know, the defensive line got younger, right? You had Karloftis in there.
Yep.
And in the secondary, got super young. You trade out Honey Badger for Justin Reed. So you got 3 or 4 years younger there. You got in Trent McDuffie, like he hasn't even played yet. So like you just have done a good job of integrating young players into this roster. Running back also, you have everyone on that room is young.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, I don't know. I want to believe that CEH is going to have his moment and he's going to turn things around. But man, you actually tweeted about this, actually. I want to know what you think about this in terms of CEH. You feel like some CEH is better in some situations than he is in other situations?
Yeah, I think he's much better under center when they're running the ball. You know, I feel like at times his problem is, so he fumbled one time last season, like against the Ravens. And since then he runs like he thinks he's gonna fumble. And it's frustrating. It's so frustrating to me. And when he's in shotgun, he's just way too hesitant. It's not designed this way, but it feels like when he gets the ball out of gun, he feels like there's too many options. And like when you get it under center, you're going in a direction. You're going downhill and you have to run hard. When you're in that gun position, you know, you kind of shuffle over, you get the ball, and you're not starting fast downhill. Mm-hmm. And I think when you force him under center, the runs under center in that 4 minute stuff, man, like he's got to go. You got to go now. Yeah. And that really helps, in my opinion, helps him be a much better runner. The dropping of the footballs in the pass game is just going to infuriate me, but he's just a frustrating player, man. Like he's just frustrating to watch.
Right. And you know, I mean, he has the talent. It's not like he can't run the football. It's not like he can't catch. He's clearly become a big part of their red zone offense, which is crazy given that the Chiefs used him week one of his rookie season, like five times he failed. And then he didn't touch the ball in the red zone again for 2 years. But, it's such a weird player, you know, he feels like he's battling himself so often. And I think that is tough. And is that a common thing actually, you know, from your perspective, when you look at running backs, are there backs where you look at them and you say, okay, this guy is much better under center than he would be, working out a shotgun or working out of the pistol?
I haven't thought about that. I play with guys that wanted, like, Adrian Peterson loved a fullback.
Right.
Like he wanted a fullback. He just loved a fullback. He loved running behind a fullback. You know, Jamal Charles, when Kansas City, was not a fullback guy. He wanted to run zone by himself, right? I mean, like, I think that's more common than gun. I just think that certain things that you're asked to do in shotgun don't translate as well for certain players. Mm-hmm. I really dislike the outside zone stuff from shotgun. I've always hated it. Any team that runs it, I dislike it. The Chiefs especially, because – you know, you need to run, kind of stretch a defense and put your foot in the ground and go up the field. CAG is not really good at that. It's not what he does well. Like Pacheco, anyone else, they do that much better. And so I'm not sure it's like, it's just skill set. Like his skill set doesn't line up with what the Chiefs ask him to do in shotgun. So I can't think of other guys. I mean, Adrian Peterson probably wouldn't be great out of shotgun. Mm-hmm. It's not his game. He wanted to be downhill fast. I think it's probably true, but I haven't thought about it in those terms really, where one is better than not in gunner. But it's a team I watch the most, and it's very jarring to me, the difference in the way he plays gun versus under center.
It's interesting. You know, I think certainly it makes sense that you'd have preferences as a back and you'd be better at one thing than another as a back. I mean, it's the same thing with being a receiver, right? Like you run certain routes better you're better in certain concepts. So that makes total sense to me. I just haven't thought about it before. So I think it's a really interesting idea. From the Buffalo perspective in this game, obviously a interesting pair of matchups, it's fair to say, with the Chiefs last year. They blow them out in the first game. I mean, that was just one of the worst beatdowns I saw all year, was the Bills dominating the Chiefs in that first game. In the second game, of course, you know, the crazy fourth quarter, the back and forth, Josh Allen just making play after play, and then the defense sort of gassing out in the fourth quarter, and the Chiefs picking up those big plays on them as well. From a Buffalo perspective, if you were going to sit there and say, okay, like you're sitting there on Tuesday and you're game planning, you say, okay, this is our biggest mismatch. This is the thing we can hit the best, whether it's on offense or defense, whether it's run or pass, whether it's a player or a concept, what to you is the biggest mismatch where you think the Bills can attack and win against the Chiefs?
Yeah, I think it's attacking Fenton, right? Like on defense. I think that's where the Chiefs are most vulnerable. And we've seen whether the Bucs do this, right? We saw last on Monday, Fenton kind of get it, you know, go after him. I feel like that's kind of where Buffalo is going to attack the most. And just find matchups where it's not kind of advantageous for them. I also think the Chiefs not having Willie Gay is kind of the spy for Josh Allen. I think will allow Josh Allen some opportunities to scramble a little bit.
Yep.
The Chiefs have always struggled against him covering those quarterback runs, which really Buffalo has not done much of this season. They have not run Josh Allen on those quarterback tosses that they've done for so many years against man coverage. I wonder if this game some of that returns, just because it feels like it's a, you know, you must win game, right? So they bring out everything they have. I think defensively, the Chiefs are pretty much okay. I mean, I think if you look at, you know, Orlando Brown, Von Miller, that might be a matchup to watch.
Yep.
You know, even Andrew Wiley, Von Miller. I feel like inside the Chiefs will be fine. Trey Smith coming back will be huge for Kansas City. He should play in this game. You could kind of tell early on the physicality on the offensive line was a little bit missed with Trey. You know, the Bills secondary is just really beat up. So the Chiefs have an advantage there. It probably comes down to just who makes a couple more mistakes. And sometimes it's just a bad throw, a tip pass, a fumble. It feels like, Bill, that might be the way this game ends, right? Or, or what makes a difference in this game is a play that's really maybe out of someone's control.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think about the Bills-Titans game. That's a good example where they run a 4th-and-1 sneak at the end of the game and Josh Allen trips.
Yeah.
And Jeffrey Simmons makes a play, and that's the difference in a game that was otherwise really close. Yeah, a couple things to get to there that I think are interesting. With Fenton, you know, the Chiefs don't move him around. You know, he's on one side of the field very consistently. He's their left corner. So if you're the Bills, you kind of know, okay, if we put Stephon Diggs on that side, he's going to get Fenton in coverage. And that's a tough matchup for anyone. But Fenton has been definitely stretched by number one wide receivers this year.
Yeah, I do wonder if McDuffie returning changes some of that.
Yep.
I did just see that the injury report for today, that Fenton is out today with a hamstring spasm, whatever. Didn't know that was a thing that happened that you set out for. But the best news is Harrison Butker's come back to practice today.
That's been such a big problem for them.
I didn't think that'd be such an issue, man. I really didn't. And Butker has his own issues, like with extra points most often than anything else.
Yes.
But they have, I mean, that has been a problem for them. So hopefully he's back healthy, because I think you can make the argument they'd be 5-0 if they had, as bad as they played against the Colts, they'd be 5-0 if Butker was there.
Special teams was their biggest problem against the Colts by far. One of the worst special teams performances of the Andy Reid era.
And an official getting his feelings hurt. So
that's also something that we need to avoid. Hopefully Harrison Butker does not insult any officials at any point over the remainder of the season, as Chris Jones did in that moment. If you were the Bills, and they move Von Miller around, so if you were going to have Von Miller lining up in passing situations, would you rather have him against Orlando Brown or have him against Andrew Wiley?
I mean, you know, the bulk of his success in his career has been over the right tackle, right? I mean, that's where he's lined up his entire. Now this year we're seeing more over the left tackle, and he's done well. I mean, I think he's the first. Was it week one? He had a bunch of sacks over the left tackle.
It was the Rams game. So
week one. Yeah. But I would put him where he feels most comfortable, which is over the right tackle. I think Wiley's done a really good job. Obviously, he struggled early against Crosby, but played much better in the second half.
Yeah.
I mean, he's, you know, if that's your worst lineman, you're doing pretty good. As an offensive line. I'd probably put him over there just because he's more comfortable there. I mean, you know, the Von Miller killers retired 2 years ago, so he didn't have to worry about that anymore. So I'd probably put him over there. What?
You had to get that in there.
I mean,
not surprised.
When you play Von Miller like 8 times and allow 2 sacks, I think you're doing a good thing.
Well, if you allow any sacks, you're going to get yelled at on Twitter, is what I've learned, if you're the Von Miller killer.
Yeah, that is. I mean, that is what it is. But I think probably that's where I would imagine he lines up most of the game.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. What I find really curious about this game, and what I think I'm intrigued to see when they actually play it out on Sunday, is how these two teams play defense. Because the Bills have had games over the past couple of years where they did not blitz at all, and they just dropped 2 deep safeties, and they played those guys 20 yards downfield, and they said, Patrick, you are going to have everything underneath you want. And we saw more teams adopt that after the Bills did it. I think that was 2019 or 2020 when the Bills did it for the first time against them and really played those 2 deep safeties pretty often. And from a Chiefs perspective, you could kind of make the same argument that maybe you play too deep and you force Josh Allen to move the ball slowly down the field. The Bills are seeing a lot of too high this year, but that's not really Steve Spagnuolo's style either. What do you, from either perspective, like, do you think this is a game where both teams should kind of just play conservative defense, or would you be more aggressive if you were Spagnuolo trying to stop Josh Allen?
So you remember that 2020 game, the Chiefs rushed the ball 46 times that game. 46 times. I would do that this weekend again if they're playing too high. Like, I know Andy Reid is not his style, but if they're not going to blitz you, just run the ball. Mm-hmm. You're going to get a lot of yards just by the box count, right? You have an offensive line that can do that for you.
Yep.
And, you know, vice versa, Buffalo probably won't do that to Kansas City if they play too high as well. They'll both be stubborn. But Steve Spagnuolo can't help himself, man. He just can't. And, you know, when you run a zero pressure on the last play of the game and it works, it fuels your fire to run more zero pressures.
Yep.
The biggest concern, I think, when you blitz Buffalo is not really the pass. It's that if Allen breaks
away,
contain, yep, he's gone. Like, that to me is the biggest concern. It's not that you have one-on-one with Stephon Diggs or Gabe Davis. It's that no one's for Josh Allen. We did see, it was kind of unique in this game against the Raiders. The Chiefs did some unique pass rush things and kind of spied Derek Carr at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's like getting ready for this weekend. They rushed three. They put Chris Jones over the right tackle, Frank Clark over the left tackle, and like, mm-hmm, they had one guy rush the center and one guy trying to drop as a spy. Yep. So I'm kind of curious if that's the way they might approach the Bills game, just kind of play coverage, because you really don't want to let Josh obviously run the ball as much as possible.
Yeah, I mean, when Josh Allen has run this year, like you said, it's really been as a scrambler, and he's just so good at scrambling. I mean, he's elusive, he's physical, he can run you over, he can run past you. I mean, he's such a difficult weapon to stop as a scrambler, and it's just easy yards. Like, it's just so many easy first downs for him because he's so good at it. So yeah, I mean, I think that is a legit concern for the Bills. And we saw last year, I mean, he could extend plays forever and did and created touchdowns in the process. It's going to be a really fun game.
The one thing I will say, mention too, Spags has always, against Allen, he's like to blitz his throwing hand. He's always blitzed from the right.
Yep.
Offense is right, essentially. And I wonder if, again, it's common knowledge. Like, that's what they're doing. They've done it 3 years in a row now, three, mm-hmm, games in a row, where they rush, even though in the loss, they blitz to his throwing hand. And I wonder if that's another plan that they do, or just say, hey, we're not going to do that anymore this year.
Yeah. I mean, what they've done has not worked. Like, they've won a couple of games, but they got blown out. They did not win because of the defense last year. That's for sure. So, A really fascinating game. I think both these teams, a lot of the moves they made this offseason were built to beat the other team in this game. I think the Chiefs expanded their defense, improved their corner because Gabriel Davis ran through them last year. And for the Bills, they got Von Miller because they want to rush with four and drop into coverage. And that's how you're going to beat the Chiefs ideally. So I think we're seeing a monumental game this weekend. It's going to be great. We have another great game. We have two great games this weekend, not just Chiefs-Bills, but also Eagles and Cowboys. We have a 5-0 Eagles team, a 4-1 Cowboys team. And one of the reasons I wanted to have you on was to talk about the Chiefs, but also because I wanted to ask you about this matchup. And when it comes to the Eagles' offensive line and the Cowboys' pass rush, their front four, their front five, wherever they're rushing, is that to you the best OL versus DL matchup of the year if everyone's healthy?
Yeah, I don't know how it could not be. Lane Johnson and D-Law have gone at it so long. I mean, it's a really good matchup, right? Because Lane is so big and strong, and DeMarcus over the years has gotten so much better at using his hands, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he just, for so long, he was just this big physical defensive end. And with that cross chop stuff he did to Evan Neal, poor kid. So you just have this great matchup with Lane against him, but they're moving guys around now, right? For so many years, it was Lane against. Now they got Parsons somewhere, and they move, you know, D-Law somewhere else. And I think you have to hope that, is Mulata healthy this week? Is he back?
It seems like it's very up in the air.
I hope he plays. Obviously, it makes it more fun. Dickerson got hurt, but came back. I think Kelsey got hurt, but came back. It's going to be a fun matchup. Because if you're the Eagles, if you're the Cowboys, where do you attack? If Mulata's playing, let's say Mulata's playing, mm-hmm, like, where do you, who do you, Dickerson, I guess, the youngest player. I mean, what I would do is this. I'd probably put Parsons against either of the guards.
Yep.
And say, you know, five across, so you have men, and say Parsons, get after it. Yep. I can even see a situation where they put DeMarcus Lawrence over Jason Kelsey and just say, just try to run through his chest, right? Like, that feels like the best options if you're trying to find matter. Otherwise, like, you just, to me, the two best pass protectors are Mulata and Johnson. I don't think you want to put your two best pass rushers on those guys. Like, you're trying to, you know, the way the Cowboys, man, I don't know how much you've watched their defense, Bill. They do a lot of fun pass rush stuff, man.
Yes.
Like, they are if you guys are a fan of just like, I don't know how many people listening are fans of pass rush design, but if you are, the Cowboys are a lot of fun. They do a lot of stuff each week. Dan Quinn is in his bag, and it's really good because you have interchangeable pieces, right? You can move Parsons, you can move Lawrence around, which again was not a big part of his early part of his career. It's more now. And they just do a lot of fun stuff. And it should be a great matchup. I cannot wait to watch this. I guess Eagles in this game because I just don't, Cooper Rush, the Cowboys offense is just sort of limited with him in there. And it's been masked by the defense. And the defense doesn't play, an A-plus game and allows 28 points. The Cowboys offense is not keeping up.
That's the tough part for sure. I mean, with that, with the pass rush coming at the Eagles offensive line, like you said, I mean, they can move Micah Parsons around. Last year, he really was more often, especially early in his kind of run where he was playing as more of a pass rusher. He was playing more over the guards. He was rushing on the interior more often, and having a ton of success doing it. Now, he can win outside. We've seen him win outside all the time. But I think you're absolutely correct in that it makes more sense, assuming Mailata plays, which if he doesn't play, then it's send him at Jack Driscoll or send him at Andre Dillard, whoever's playing left tackle. But I think playing him over the guards and having him rush the guards, and whether it be on twists, whether it be on games, whether it be on just straight up rushes against either guard, I think it makes sense. But what I wanted to ask you about Jason Kelce, the other Kelce in this conversation. I think as a layperson, you hear, okay, Jason Kelce is great. And that is good to know. And Jason Kelce is excellent. But from your perspective, what does Jason Kelce do? What is he capable of doing that a typical league average center is not able to do?
He's like 285 and plays like he's 330. That feels like a good way, good start. 285 might be generous. If he weighs in with like a couple 5-pound plates in his pants on Friday morning weigh-ins, maybe he's 285.
If he's fishing,
that big fishing scandal we saw like 2 weeks ago, that's how Jason Kelce weighs in every Friday at the facility, puts just lead weights in his pants. He does everything so well. Again, he's because of his size, he's just very quick and athletic, and they build the run game around that, right? They allow him to get in space, and again, he blocks guys like he is 330 pounds. Like he's a very powerful individual at the size that he is. And so allows them to do a lot of fun things in the run game. And obviously the length of his career has allowed him to master angles and knowing where the defense is going to be. And, I think for Jalen Hurts and his growth, having a player like that who is able to help you in protection identification, able to help you in run game identification, a guy that you trust the snap will be in the same place each and every time, a guy you trust is not going to allow pressure up the middle. Those things are so, it reminds me a little bit of like Ryan Khalil I played with is sort of the same size, a little different body structure, but he was, lucky if he was like 290, right? And he played with Cam Newton. And he helped Cam Newton so much early in his career with just the ins and outs of learning protections. And I think with Jalen Hurts, we're seeing the same thing. We're like, he's just there's a comfortability there with having a player of that caliber being in charge of the offense, obviously outside of what Jalen Hurts has to do as a quarterback.
Certainly Jalen Hurts looks more confident to me as a passer after the snap now than he did his first season, really even last year at the NFL level. But let me ask you, Hurts has been great this year, but what is your level of confidence and belief in Hurts as a true franchise quarterback? Is he there? Is he in that top tier, or do you still have to see more from him before you really believe he's that guy?
This is what the question is always tough, right? Because, I think you would like to see a deep playoff run this year, right? I think that's the next step. If you see, that'd be Super Bowl, in my opinion, a playoff win, right? Because he didn't play well in the playoff game, right? A playoff win, you'll be at home most likely. But I've been wrong about it. I was wrong about him. And I give credit to Nick Sirianni. And look, it's okay. I think now, for so long, I was guilty of this this idea of a true pocket passer, right? I want my quarterback to be this guy who throws. And Jalen Hurts still needs to, that's the core of the job. I'm not saying he can't do this. The core job is that. But we just see better coordinators now that just design offenses around quarterbacks. Would Jalen Hurts have been great in the offense I played in with Jake Delhomme? No. But, you know, I'm like, no, but like Nick Sirianni has designed an offense around that offensive line, the run game, Hurts' ability to get out in space, his ability to stress defenses with his speed, and then obviously his ability to throw the ball deep with the playmakers they've drafted and find over-under, you know, situations. Like, they do a good job with it. So in this offense, he's absolutely a franchise quarterback. Is he a franchise quarterback in Tom Brady's offense? Probably not, right? In Bill Belichick's offense? I don't know. In this offense, I think he absolutely is, Bill. Like, and that's a part of this discussion, right? It's like, in, you know, is Lamar Jackson a franchise quarterback in an air raid offense? Probably not. But in this offense, absolutely is. And of course, I think that's very simple. I think Jalen Hurts and Lamar can play in different offenses, but we have to discuss this decision around what they're going to be playing in. And for right now and for a long period of time, Lamar is going to be in Baltimore playing in this offense around him. And very clearly, Nick Sirianni designed an offense in Philadelphia to fit what Jalen Hurts does well. And in both instances, they're absolutely franchise quarterbacks for what they're being asked to do in their offense.
Yeah, and I think this is a tough discussion because I think you get to that question of, oh, well, you don't think they could play in other offenses, so they're a system quarterback.
They're
all system quarterbacks, but also Lamar Jackson and Jalen Hurts, they're the system. They're the reason this offense works. Like, there's a big difference between being, you know, like, who am I going to insult here by saying they're a system quarterback? Like
Jared Goff.
Jared Goff's a perfect example.
The best example is Jimmy Garoppolo right now.
Jimmy Garoppolo's also good, where it's like, you know, yes, Jimmy Garoppolo can be plugged into a offense that has plenty of pieces around him, and when he has a clean pocket, he's going to look fine. But Jimmy Garoppolo is not a guy who's going to elevate your offense or be the focal point of your offense for any long stretch of time. And with Lamar Jackson, with Jalen Hurts, with, to a lesser extent, Josh Allen, I think Josh Allen is more of a plug and play because he is a better pocket passer.
I think the Bills have built out a good offense with him, right? I mean, obviously went and got Stephon Diggs, said, hey, just go run as far as you can. We'll throw it up to you. Like, I think that the best thing that's happening in the NFL, in my opinion, is offensive coaches have stopped, like, this ego thing of, like, we're going to run my offense.
Dude, do you remember, and you weren't even in the league at this point, and I was in college, but Michael Vick running – with the Falcons and then hiring Jim Moore Jr.
A two-back offense.
We're running the classic West Coast offense. That's what you're going to operate up. And you have Michael freaking Vick. You have this incredible weapon, and that's what you do with him? Man, that would have been so infuriating to cover.
And again, these coaches are doing what they want to do, but they're doing it around the skill set of the players they have at quarterback. And so that's why I think the franchise quarterback discussion is so different. Because again, you have to factor in what offense they're playing in and what they're being asked to do. You know, like is Pat Mahomes as good in like Kingsbury's pro offense as he is in Andy Reid's offense? I don't know. Maybe. But Andy Reid's very helpful playing Andy Reid.
Right. It's good. Like, there's nothing wrong with having a good coach.
Yeah. So I think that's part of like this discussion is I hope that people understand, like, I think Hurts is a franchise quarterback. He's getting very close to being that guy because he's playing an offense that really fits him well.
And that's great. Like, he's playing an offense that fits him well, and he's also making that offense possible way that, you know, Gardner Minshew is not going to be the driving force of an offense. Gardner Minshew could be fine. He was fine last year. He's fine as a backup. He's fine as a backup for pretty much any offense, but Hurts is a different player and a different, he's just a difference maker in a way that a lot of other guys are not. I feel like I know your answer to one of these questions, but give me winners for these two games on this weekend.
I'll go Philly just because I think that, you know, the offense there, you know, just a different disadvantage without Dak Prescott. It seems like he's not playing as of recording this. He's not practicing this week. You know, I'll go Kansas City. Buffalo's my Super Bowl pick this year. I haven't changed it yet.
Mine as well.
But I think if we're going to see the Chiefs play like they did against Tampa Bay, they're going to win this game. I think when they're playing their best, they're the best team in the NFL. Mm-hmm. But they don't always do that. There's a problem. Yes. And maybe it's because they know that they're that good that they can just like be down 17-0. But this is a week they cannot. I do wonder about the short week though, right? Monday night, it's a Sunday afternoon game. You know, you're one less day. And I know they've had coaches preparing the game plan for Buffalo for weeks now. It's not like it's but there's still one less day to really get in. You know, I'm sure that in a normal week, they would have dove into Buffalo Monday night with Pat Mahomes, but now obviously that's Tuesday morning. You know, one night, I get it, but it could make a difference. You know, one less day to recover your body and whatnot. I'll go Kansas City here ever so slightly. First time in Mahomes' career, he's been underdog at home in like 38
games. Wow.
Yeah.
That didn't occur. That's wild.
Yeah, plus three, again, 3 points at home. So I'll go that direction now. It wouldn't surprise me if Buffalo won. I'd be very surprised if Dallas won.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I think it really would take, you know, Mailata being out and Kelsey not being 100%, and just them winning with their pass rush and forcing a couple takeaways, which we know they can do. They've done it the past couple of weeks and been very successful at doing it. So I would never say never, because I always think the universe bends to whatever makes better sports talk stories. And I feel like Cooper Rush beating the Eagles would be a very compelling sports talk story. I don't want to be a part of it, but
if he beat them, like, actually himself,
yes,
that would break the internet, because like I think right now I think even the most diehard Cooper Rush fan realizes, like, yeah, you know, throw for 100 yards is not sustainable, but if you throw for like 350, you'd be like, all right, well, maybe we gotta change our minds. But again, the Cowboys offense is not really built around Cooper Rush throwing for 350 though. Like, that's right. Not really what they want to be,
for sure. Absolutely not. And they haven't needed to yet. And they might have to against the Eagles, because the Eagles have been really good on the offensive side of the ball. Okay, Jeff, where can people check out more of all the coverage you do of the NFL?
Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You, my podcast. You can find me there. We put out 2 episodes a week. We have our wagering episode. It'll be out pretty soon for this weekend. And we do kind of a recap. And at my Twitter, at Jeff Schwartz. I kind of link everything I do for my various platforms. Fox Sports is one of them. My podcast, obviously, different things I do, including this one. So I'm glad to be here, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Take care.
All right. Thanks so much to my friend Jeff Schwartz. Does excellent work covering the NFL. He's excited about these games this weekend. I'm excited about these games this weekend. Hope you are as well. Hope you guys enjoy the football. We'll be back next week, breaking down what happened and previewing week 6. More coming on the way. So thanks so much for listening.